Welcome to Southeast Geeks, a Silicon Slopes East podcast devoted to what people are geeky about in Southeast Utah. I'm your host, Jade Powell. On these podcasts, we interview locals, business owners, and individuals that like to spend time in Southeast Utah for one geeky reason or another. These episodes may be about individuals or companies doing high-tech things in the region or entertaining activities that people are passionate about in southeastern Utah. Today, we are talking with Stuart Clayson and Patrick Mullen with the Regional Growth Program. How are you doing?
We're doing well. I think we're doing intros. This is Stuart.
And I'm Patrick Mullen.
Patrick, take it away. Let the audience know who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from Salt Lake City, Utah. I actually went to Westminster College up there, still live in Salt Lake.
The Gryffindors.
The Griffins, technically, but Stuart calls us Gryffindors, which I'll take because everyone wants to be a Quidditch player. That's secretly what we want to be doing. But I live in Salt Lake with my wife, Katie, and two young daughters, Audrey and Emma. And along with Stuart, we co-founded the Regional Growth Program 4 years ago at this point. And we'll tell you a little bit more about that. But prior to the Regional Growth Program, I was the executive director at Sorensen Impact, a University of Utah-based think tank that works on impact investing around the world. And if you don't catch me working, you can find me in the mountains where I love to ski, often with Stuart, or run, or just really be outside. So that's me, Stuart.
I like to refer to Patrick as my billy goat friend. He actually, fun fact, he just got back from Big Sky. He did a 50K run.
Wow. I did. Yeah, 32 miles.
Because he's a billy goat.
How was that?
Fun and torturous. So did it about 9 hours.
Yeah, you had successfully finished. He had some hip issues going into it.
Oh, yeah.
But he muscled through.
Yep.
Good on you.
Highly recommend it for all your listeners if you want to have 9 hours to just go meditate just in the mountains. Just to
yeah. Run around.
Well, on that note, this is Stuart Clayson. And for the audience, I have to tell everyone I love being on a podcast because it's just a great way to have conversations with friends. You mute out all the noise. I co-founded the Regional Growth Program with Patrick 4 years ago, and we can dig into that. I moved to Utah in 2013 with my wife and then son, and we've added a daughter. I moved here to be director of economic development for Salt Lake City. I then worked in the governor's office doing conventional energy development. Then I worked at Salt Lake County, founding a new department around regional development, around transportation, housing, and economic development. And I don't know, my interests right now are chasing my children around. My son does comp basketball and comp lacrosse, and my daughter has started soccer and lacrosse. So our free time is practices and game time. And then Sunday we try to recharge. So that is me in a nutshell.
So you mentioned you both co-founded the Regional Growth Program. What's kind of the elevator pitch of what that program is, what you've been doing, who you're serving, some projects, things like that?
So we founded the Regional Growth Program, Patrick and I did together. It was a combination of the state of Utah needing some expertise around opportunity zones, which were created in 2017, at the end of 2017. And Patrick just happens to be the foremost expert in the state on opportunity zones and one of the experts in the country. He's doing a lot of interesting work. And I was transitioning out of working at Salt Lake County, and a lot of the two major communities we started this work in, Carbon and Emery County, wanted some technical expertise around economic development. So we kind of married those two needs and created a program. And I think the elevator pitch is that there was no intent of creating a program that worked with the AOGs, that did the things we did. We just knew we had some knowledge and we wanted to bring that knowledge into communities that otherwise didn't have access to it. And it's been very fruitful. We're going to dig into, you know, some of the things that, let's dig into one of the major things we worked on. First project we worked on in Carbon County was the incentive for Intermountain Electronics. The founder, John Houston, was trying to figure out where to locate their corporate headquarters. They have 4 locations nationwide, and they had an incentive offer from the state of Colorado, and they were really looking at doing their expansion in Denver. And we were tasked with creating an incentive that stood against what Denver did. And at the time, and I think it still holds, we got the largest rural incentive ever awarded by the state for Intermountain Electronics, coupled with the local taxing entities willing to also provide a post-performance incentive for Intermountain Electronics to expand. The building is complete. They're about to make some pretty massive capital expenditures on equipment, and they're trying to find employees to hire. Other projects that we've done in Emory County, we've worked extensively with Emory County on the San Rafael Energy Research Center. But we're not driving these things. These things are driven by the community. We're just bringing our expertise to help them come to fruition. And we're making sure that the projects that come to fruition are impactful and good, first and foremost, for the local communities in which they exist.
I would just add, I think that was exceptionally well stated, but the piece I'd add is that, you know, when we started doing this, it really was a little bit more transaction by transaction in some of the communities. Because to Stuart's point, we came down and said, look, you have someone with amazing background in Stuart who brings all sorts of knowledge on the public finance side. In my background, kind of working extensively on the private investment capital along with this new incentive of opportunity zones, which really created an unprecedented demand from private investors trying to come into underserved communities across the country. We took a look at it and said, look, you know, there's a lot of people working, kind of combining public and private finance on the Wasatch front. There's not a lot of folks doing that in rural parts of the state. Why don't we go down and be a resource? And I think that was literally how we pitched it in the beginning is we're a resource and we're happy to help in these communities and see what we can do. And as it's really evolved and grown, I think it's become a little bit more regionalized. And we work very closely with Jade and the team at the AOG to, you know, no longer just say, you know, hey, it's transaction by transaction. We're happy to help on that. But it's a lot more, what's the bigger picture of regional growth, which is hence kind of why we chose to name it the Regional Growth Program. We're not super witty on the branding, but I think it's spot on how we named it, because that really is what we seek to support is how do we help play a role in what the local communities are trying to grow from.
The thing that I also wanted to kind of speak to is discovering Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments and discovering Jade, you, and also discovering Jerry and your amazing staff, and just seeing the plethora of work that you guys do across the board for your four counties. That wasn't intentional. We didn't know that would exist, but this program would not be where it is without the buy-in and support from your agency. And that's why it's regionalized, because you guys are already addressing so many other issues from a regional perspective. Why not do growth and kind of understanding what growth means in San Juan as opposed to Grand, as opposed to Emory, as opposed to Carbon? And then how do you even scale that up to a statewide perspective? But I it wouldn't be where it is without you and your agency.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you saying that. Now, the regional growth program is not just in Southeastern Utah. You're working now with other AOGs and other regional bodies, mm-hmm. and doing this across Utah, not across in the urban areas, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So it's mainly been these rural AOGs, the other rural AOGs that are in the state of Utah, and you've been helping them, assisting them with other projects and
things like
that.
And the needs and the issues are different. I do like, Patrick, that you said we started from a transactional perspective, but we've scaled it up to kind of think more programmatically. And the other piece, as we started this, we ran it like a startup. We thought entrepreneurial, because if we're not providing value, then the program just won't exist, because you won't get financial support from public and private entities.
I was going to say, for your listeners, when we first started, we were actually incubated, I guess would be the right term, within an organization called the Utah Association of Counties. So as you mentioned, in terms of the other regions in the state, that is the statewide body for every single county in the state. And we chose to work exclusively in the non-Wasatch Front communities. Part of that was driven by the work we engaged with at the governor's office around opportunity zones. They didn't really want to see some of that help going to the more urbanized areas. But it also just made sense from what we were trying to do that there was a much higher value in those rural communities. And the AOGs very quickly became a natural convening point because of all the great work that you do in these communities. You bring them together, you have the relationships. And I think we're very lucky to partner with you and Jerry and the team here as really our first. I will give you guys the credit. You were definitely the first to sort of buy into it and go on this kind of wild and crazy ride with us. But now as we continue to scale it up, I think you're spot on. We do really see those AOGs kind of being a big piece of it. And for us at the Regional Growth Program, what's really exciting is we sort of feel we've fully incubated, if I can keep the metaphor going, and we've now graduated to where we've officially spun out as our own consultancy. So Stuart and I have taken the Regional Growth Program and now are running it in partnership with a lot of great groups like the AOGs, but we're now doing it independently on our own. So it's very exciting.
It looks like the geek is on sneak. It's time to play Geeky or Game Over.
Board games.
Game Over.
Much to the chagrin of my 4-year-old daughter, I'm joining Stuart in Game Over. She loves Candyland. I'll play it with her, but otherwise I'm out on board games.
You don't like board games at all?
I mean, is Hungry Hungry Hippo a board game?
Do you like Hungry Hungry Hippo?
No, I don't like any board games. Game Over.
What about card games?
Oh, I'll play some cards. Is that a board game?
I don't think it's a board game, but
I love spades.
Love cards.
Love spades. Played a lot of spades in high school. Love dominoes. Love
dominoes was fun.
Mm-hmm. Poker. Yeah. Lots of, yeah. Cards I'm in, board games.
What's your favorite poker game?
You have to ask me, I'd say Omaha.
Omaha? Have you ever heard of Bure?
Of course.
Love Bure.
The number one game of the NBA.
You'll lose your mind on the betting in Bure. Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm not a big poker player. Hiking.
Geeky.
Geeky as well.
But like, you don't just hike, you run, right?
Yeah, he runs.
I like both. If I'm by myself, I like to trail run a lot. It's sort of my, it keeps me centered. It's just a lot of fun. It helps me reset. But if I'm out and about with friends, I love a good hike. Get up to a viewpoint. There's tons of good hikes down here. You've taken us out to some really scenic areas in Carbon and Emery County. So I'm all about hiking.
The best part about a hike, one, getting my kids to do it. And we've now got our 4-year-old. She'll go three miles, but it's good as you get there and you're like, oh my God, this is a killer. And then you get to that viewpoint. It's like the tower on the Wasatch. There's like that metal tower. I remember that one. I forget the name of it, but you get up there and you want to give up. And you're like, oh my God, this is a killer. Or you get to one of those lakes kind of up in the Cottonwoods and then you're like, oh.
Yep.
And then you're like, it's the payoff, right?
There's always a payoff.
Yeah. I like that when you get to sit down and open up your snacks.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Take a little break.
I don't have snacks by the time I'm there. I've consumed them all because I'm convinced I'm going to die.
The snacks is my reward. Like, you got there.
Oh, that's a good use. Question for the group. Hiking boot or trail shoe?
Well, trail shoe because I need multi-purpose, but a good hiking boot if you're going long distance, you can make it work.
I've never really worn hiking boots. It's usually just been...
And you just like do like running shoe or trail shoe?
Just kind of like a all-purpose.
What brand? Shoe.
Usually Columbia, I want to say.
Okay. How about you, Patrick? Hoka?
I'll put a plug in for Hoka. They can send the check in the mail. I'm their biggest fan and love to promote their brand, but they're great.
They're a Utah company?
No, they're a French company. They're big ties to Utah. So
yeah. They have really big soles on their features.
How about you?
I had a pair of Under Armour hiking boots that kind of got blown out, and I'm still kind of trying. Right now, when we go, I just throw on tennis shoes. But that's why I was asking. I'm trying to figure that whole component out.
I've also had Merrells
mm-hmm.
and Keens.
Mm-hmm.
Those have both been good to me.
Okay.
I call them old man shoes because that's what my dad used to always wear.
Well, three grown men talking about hiking could also be called old man conversation. So we're right on brand.
Not just hiking, but the shoes you wear.
Well, let me just tell you, old men, they know because they've gotten to be old. They've got good playbooks.
Skiing.
Geeky.
Yeah, this one's easy. Geeky.
Yeah. And Patrick, you've kind of moved past. You and I will do some resort skiing, but you're Mr. Backcountry.
I've got to keep the Billy Goat persona going. Got to climb up hills. So if there's snow on the ground, I'll be ski touring. But it's one of the, you know, we love Utah as a family, but I think a big reason why is Utah in the winter is a special place. So skiing. And that's actually, Stuart and I were good friends. I think we became really great friends over skiing. We ski a ton together. So it's a lot of fun.
We do. I have a setup for touring, but I have not done the avalanche training, which you have. But I do have a beacon, but my wife has hidden that beacon from me because she's convinced that if I have it, I'll go up with Patrick and not know how to take care of myself if there's an avalanche. and then I'll die in an avalanche, which she doesn't understand is I will never put myself in a scenario where that would happen, because that sounds like a terrible way to die.
Yeah.
That or drowning, like either one of those would be a really bad way to go. Sorry to go to that dark place.
Bring us out of it, Jay. Yeah. What's the next one? We can't end on that.
Yeah.
Fishing.
The right kind of fishing. I'm super geeky.
I am not a very good fisherman, but I am geeky about fishing. It's a lot of fun.
Well, do we want to tell the audience about the fishing trip that I've introduced you to?
Absolutely.
So my father and I would go to the coast of Louisiana and fish. We used the same guide, and it just kind of fizzled off. It's down in cut off Louisiana or Port Fouchon. It's not deep sea fishing. It's brackish water. So you're catching speckled trout or redfish. And I've resurrected it, and we've done it for a couple of years now, and we take friends, and that's a ton of fun because I don't like to fish. I like to catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's a lot of fun, and it's fun talking trash out at the fishing camp with a bunch of your guy friends. I enjoy that.
It's the kind of fishing I'm into because, you know, when it gets dry, you're not catching a lot of fish. You have a guide who knows right where they are. And oftentimes he'll watch someone like me. I'll speak for myself. Not a very good fisherman. I'll cast, and he likes to talk trash and comes over and just goes, you don't know what you're doing. Give me that. And then he'll cast for you. And then you catch a big fish and you're like, look at this.
You get to reel in.
Exactly. Yep. Like, yep.
Look what I did.
Exactly.
Well, so. And this year, Patrick and I were on the same boat, and the redfish are like a drum fish, so they're bigger. The speckled trout they're better to eat, but the redfish are fun to fight because you've got a setup that they fight. And you have it. I mean, it takes 30 minutes.
Yeah, it takes a while.
So we were fishing and everything was good. And then Patrick brought in a redfish. And do you want to tell the – I got
– Well, prior to this, we had not caught one of – they're the goal. You want to get a redfish because they're comparative to the trout. They're huge. Stuart was like trying to get the boat up. He's like, we're going to do it. I've done it before. And we had all never done it. He said, come on, team. We're in it together. And then I start reeling it in, and he just flips a switch. He's like, out of my way. I've got a fish. It's my turn to catch one.
Yeah. I'm super pissed.
I'm bringing it in. And he's like, some of us are trying to fish here. And that whole team mentality went out. But luckily, he caught one. Like, it couldn't have been more than 10 minutes after me.
Oh, yeah.
So then we had two redfish, and everybody was back to being happy. But it brought out the inner competitive. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
That is great.
Anything else we want to play on the game?
No, I think that's all.
Okay, fair enough.
Does anyone ever, you just for the audience, one of the things listed is computers. If someone says computers, is there anyone who goes, I'm out.
Game over.
I can't live in the modern world.
I'll have a pen and paper and an abacus, please.
It was a good game. Sorry.
This is a good game.
I liked it.
Yeah.
What is your drive with assisting rural Utah? Because I this is especially true with you two both living on the Wasatch Front. So kind of why rural Utah?
I think you have the best answer. So yeah. I don't know if you want to give it.
For me, when I was at Salt Lake County, that's how we got aligned with UAC, because the reality is Salt Lake County in terms of the Utah economy is going to be fine. It's where the capital is. It's where the international airport is. It's where the University of Utah is. It's where, you know, it's going to be fine. And a lot of rural counties just kind of wanted to understand how to structure on a local level, not from a state level, but on a local level. How do you structure kind of economic development deals, specifically around a thing called tax incremental financing? And so I like presented. And honestly, it was like I'd met people. I was like and I'd kind of gotten, when I was working in Office of Energy Development, I got to know this community a bit. It was during the time when the Obama administration had made some policy decisions around coal as a power source. And so it was this community was going through some really difficult times.
Still are now.
Still are, 100%. Not minimizing it. But there's a shift in the mindset, I think, of this is done and we have to go. That's what the San Rafael Energy Research Center is really. That's why that's an exciting endeavor. But it, for me personally, and I'll let Patrick speak, but for me, it was just like I'd met people that I've known my whole life, just in a Utah context. And you can't afford, you can't BS your way through things in communities like Carbon and Emery County, because, you know, everybody's got 9 jobs and only 2 of them pay them. You know, you're the football coach and you're coming, you know, you guys just had someone who passed away who'd been coming and volunteering at your food bank for however many years.
Right.
Right. So it's fun to be in communities where you have no choice other than being authentic, because if you're anything other than that, they'll smell you out real quick. And it's also really fun to work. It's really fulfilling to work in communities that are filled with capacity and knowledge and experience, and they're just looking to find people that they can trust to help them put things together in the right way.
And I would add onto that, you know, obviously my perspective is different having been born and raised in Salt Lake City and obviously living in a more urbanized environment. But I think in my career, you know, I've spent a lot of time working with investors who are seeking new markets, places that they haven't put their capital before, because there's growth opportunity. And I think people resonate with wanting to be part of community resiliency, community growth, kind of ensuring the transition from, you know, one economic driver to another. And I know it's down here, it's figuring out, you know, we might have some of these coal-fired assets that, you know, unfortunately the federal government has put timelines on. So how do we transition into new ways of doing energy production, being that hub for the state of Utah? How do we bring on other services? And I think, you know, having that passion to sort of say, you know, this is a real opportunity. This community is amazing. I mean, I think this is an area that if I was an investor, there's a ton of potential, but it takes some translation. And I think it takes some work in making those transactions more palatable for those groups. And I think for what Stuart and I are doing, it's a lot of fun to be able to be part of that. And I say be part of that because we're a small part of that. This is really your community and communities that are driving most of it. And I think we feel pretty honored to be a part of it. And it's great to kind of have been brought in and be part of the team, but, you know, recognizing, you know, hey, this is really you all driving this. We're just trying to support as best we can.
Thank you. So both Stuart, you brought up, you know, there's been some federal policies put in place that help with the war on coal that we're currently seeing. You brought up the transitioning of economies. So with the announcement of the coal burning power plants in Emery County being shut down, we've already seen Carbon County experienced it shut down in 2015, everything torn out. You can't even tell that there was a power plant there. Yeah. Now we're talking about Huntington power plant and Hunter power plant in Castledale both being shut down in the next 10 to 15 years, and maybe even sooner than that.
And in Miller County, you have the changeover from coal to hydrogen-based power production.
So with that, what are your thoughts on, like, because that's going to take a big toll on the local economies?
Yeah, so first and foremost, it's going to affect the entire tax base and the way proper, you know, schools and counties and special service districts, they're funding, you know, water conservancies, their funding comes from property taxes. And Utah's unique approach to property taxes, the only way you can raise taxes is you have to do a process called truth in taxation, which Carbon County did a couple of years ago. About 2 years ago. And no one wants to pay more taxes.
No, it was like a 700% tax increase for that one levy.
Yeah. But it's necessary in order to keep funding because things, you know, services are needed. And so that's complicated. But the other piece of it, when you have a county like Emery County, where their tax base is so dependent on those two power plants, because that I don't know the real numbers, but I bet it's more than 50% of the tax base comes from the taxes paid on those power plants. And we won't even talk about kind of centrally assessed and the challenging of the taxes that the power plant play. Let's just talk about their shuttering date, which, you know, is it 2036? When is it? But the moment that happens, every other taxpayer in the county is going to pay a higher level of taxes to fill the lost revenue from those power plants shutting down. And that's a real thing that they're staring down. Yeah, you look like you're going to say something.
Well, I was just going to ask, so what do we do? Like, from your perspective, what does Carbon and Emery County do to prepare for this?
The exciting thing that I think Emery County's done because along with power production, there's been a massive investment that started also in the Obama administration with renewables. And that has traditionally been wind and solar. And Utah has seen some wind. If any of the listeners go through Spanish Fork and you can see that project. I think that's like a 15 meg project. I think it's more of a demonstration project than actually like producing power. But Beaver County has some solar. Wind that's being produced. But Carbon County, the interesting thing that those power plants give is they give a lot of transmission capacity that exists right there in Emory County. And so Emory County has seen a massive influx of solar investment. Now, that's been kind of interesting to watch because solar's never going to create baseload power. It's fine. Like, I'm not opposed to it. And the battery component is interesting. I mean, I don't know if anybody's actually delivered like a 400 megawatt battery operation, but apparently they're coming in Emory County. But what Emory County has done with that investment that's being made, because we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, the county is capturing those dollars and driving it towards future investing. And the San Rafael Energy Research Center is an example of that, because eventually whether we make power off of coal or not, guess what? China's buying a whole lot of coal. Like, coal, I don't think we're done with coal, but I'm no expert. But we're going to need baseload power from somewhere. And that baseload power is going to be produced in communities across this country. And so I think the working thesis with the San Rafael Energy Research Center is, if we're going to make power from nuclear and using thorium, why would we not have that research and that investment happen there, so then the long-term investment can happen? So I think the goal is to use the existing infrastructure that exists in Emory County to replace it with other power generating operations that then can backfill the lost revenue from those coal-fired power plants shutting down.
We need to start working on that now.
Yeah, and I think that work is happening. I think on the state level it's happening. I think the Emory County commissioners are working on that. And then, you know, the UReady Coalition, which I don't know how much your listeners know about that, but like, having the universities involved, like, it's happening, but we need to accelerate it. Does that answer your question?
It does. Patrick, anything you want to add?
No, I think that got into the heart of a lot of the major kind of issues that are coming from it. And I think the only kind of broader piece I'd add is it just really stretches, I think, the limits of the local economy when you have something that shocking occur to it, right? And even though there's time to plan and you're saying we need to start doing that now, when you have an asset that large that is shutting down, it puts a burden on, you know, well, where does that employment base move to? And how do you think about the ancillary services that go around that, like housing and some other pieces? And when you start trying to bring in the other components around, let's pivot to renewables, let's bring in other employers or grow existing employers, those are some of the things that we often spend a lot of time with you thinking about is, you know, how do we bring that in? And I know one of the next questions, not to create our segue, is around the entrepreneurial ecosystem, but it's about how you bring different components that can help in that transition and that development to really diversify and bring new opportunities to the residents of the region.
Yeah, you segued into the entrepreneurial ecosystem, and I know that was a question, Jade, but the thought process that behind that was cooked up in the context of the regional growth program. There was a pretty massive whiteboarding session. Patrick and I were there. Your staff was there. But the notion is that in this region, you used to be able to go from high school and you could go work in the mine, or you could go work at the power plant and you could have a sustainable life. Now you have high school graduates that don't see opportunities here. So they're leaving, even though there's a fine academic institution in Price with USU Eastern, they're leaving, whether it's in-state or somewhere else, to get an education, to get a skill set, and to never return.
Yep.
And so how do we capture the minds of that sophomore in high school, or even that eighth grader in middle school, and say, look, you can go live wherever you want and do whatever you want, but you can be an entrepreneur here. And there are entrepreneurs that live here. Ellis Pierce is a fine example of an entrepreneur. He has umpteen companies and he's made a very successful life here. John Houston, we just brought up Intermountain Electronics. They started out as a company building, you know, electrical systems for the mines, and now they're building very sophisticated electrical systems for massive data centers. And they've opted to have their corporate headquarters here. I think the notion behind the Silicon Slopes Southeast chapter is the idea that maybe in Point of the Mountain, everyone is going to go work for SaaS-based tech companies and work in offices and do that. I don't think your tech-related development in this community is going to be in that space, but you have existing skill sets around kind of mechanical capacities. And a prime example, if you go out to the San Rafael Energy Research Center, the University of Utah was going to decommission a massive piece of combustion testing equipment, and the Utah State and the commissioners decided they would take it. They got it in 9 pallets, and it was completely kind of deconstructed. And a local person from Emory County with like no kind of advanced degree put the whole thing back together, and it's working. And
they've got electrical background.
Electrical background, because he had an existing skill set working at the power plant. He put it all back together, and now they've got contracts with like companies testing kind of feedstock to see kind of what the emission emission outputs are. That's exciting.
And right.
That skill set exists here. So I think that's what the entrepreneurial ecosystem is about not kind of making entrepreneurs like, oh, we're going to, but awakening the mind of young people so that they know that they have other options than just to leave. Just because you're not going to go work at the mine and not go work at the power plant, you have other options here.
Yep.
And if you love this community, you should execute those options here, because it's the only way you're going to keep the community alive. And that's one of the, back to the question about why I'm passionate about this. For the listeners, I'm from a very rural community in North Louisiana that is dead. My parents are there, but it's dead, and it will never come back to life. And I can't revive that community, but I would hate to see more rural communities across this country die because there's no hope.
You're here.
Might start crying. Patrick has seen me cry in meetings before.
We were flirting with it. I didn't know if we'd get the whole way, but I would just add, you know, on that note, I think one thing about your region in particular is you're remarkably well positioned to take advantage of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. You have a lot of the things that other communities in the state don't have. You have an anchor educational institution in USU Eastern. You've got geographical proximity to some of those areas if you do have residents that want to go up and spend time kind of in the Wasatch Front, Utah County piece. But in 2022, I mean, I think the trend towards remote work, you're in a great part of the state, even if you get, you know, further south in your region down into places like Grand and San Juan County. I mean, there's a lot of desirable places to live where people want to have representation and can dial in through, you know, great broadband, the things that you have through Emory Telecom and everything else kind of in this area. So I think the region itself has done a really great job positioning the community to take advantage of this entrepreneurial ecosystem, but it takes nurturing. And I think that's what Stuart was alluding to, is you've got to nurture it to get there, to really help it thrive, to create those opportunities for young people. But it's definitely moving in the right direction.
Thank you.
And then to jump on, just to close it out on challenges and opportunities, that's question number 8 for the listeners. We've now taken Jade's role as the moderator, but I
think
you mentioned some opportunities. The other opportunities that I think they're important to note is all the existing infrastructure that has been developed to support the kind of extraction activities that happen here. The rail infrastructure that exists in Carbon County is massive, and you are strategically located to, you know, multiple interstates. The airport that exists in Carbon County, I mean, you can land a 747.
Just can't take off.
You can't take off, but it's when you go out there and just take in the magnitude of what exists out there, like, holy heck, like, this is here. And USU has already been training pilots, and they're looking at training mechanics out there. So there's a lot of opportunities. I'll just mention challenges. Challenges is going back to Intermountain Electronics, workforce, and housing.
And if you go down into our southern counties in Grand and San Juan, it even becomes challenging to find that private land to develop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of the public
land. There's a lot of public land.
The public land component. So I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that.
It often, you know, I'm sure this is not new for your listeners, but we sort of call it, it's like a chicken and egg problem, right? You sort of look at it and say, how can we get developers down here to build housing? We need to have that. And a lot of those same folks will say, well, you know, I want to come down and do it, but what's my incentive? And by the way, like, what are the jobs that those folks are going to have if I build houses for it? And then you go to build the workforce and you say, well, we can't build the workforce because we don't have housing. And you're sort of sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, why are these two sides not working together? This makes sense. We have similar kind of interests. And I think it takes, you know, an agency like the AOG and our program and others kind of all collectively working to help solve that. And I know that's first and foremost, you know, one of the bigger kind of macro level pictures we're spending a lot of our time on, but that is, you know, it's frustrating. I think it's very frustrating for a lot in your community because they say, I just don't get it. Like, why can't we get both sides of that to sort of coordinate? And it's a lot harder than it sounds just sort of saying it out loud. And I think that speaks to the level of work and investment that's going on to really help solve it.
And then the last thing is, any last thoughts and jokes are welcome. I won't make an attempt to tell a joke, but in our first year of this program, Patrick single-handedly did the most impactful thing for Carbon and Emory County in the same day on the same trip. And I don't know if you'd like to share that with the audience.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going. After about 14 years of clean driving, no single infraction of any kind, I got a speeding ticket coming down into Helper, where they drop it down to 55. And I thought, you know,
I don't know what you guys call those here, but we call those speed traps in Louisiana.
And he trapped me fantastically. It was well deserved. I was way over the limit. I just owned it. We kind of cut up. We were laughing. He was like, "Oh yeah, you were flying." So he a nice sheriff gave me the ticket, and you know, I took it. And then I was driving down the highway in Emory County. Like about 90 minutes later, I did not even know that I was above the speed limit. So this is where Commissioner Wilson has given me the nickname "Lead Foot," which I think is very accurate. And all of a sudden, a police officer going the other way flipped his lights on, came around, and I looked at Stuart. I said, "He can't be coming after me." And sure enough, pulled me over.
This just happened.
Oh, and so I was sort of shell shocked. He came up to the window and he's like, "License and registration." And I just didn't say anything. I just was like, "Here you go." And then he came back and goes, "Yeah, you're having a real bad day, aren't you?" And I just had to laugh. So after that, I paid both tickets. So we like to make the joke. I've now single-handedly invested in both economies. And Grand and San Juan, there's still hope. I hope for the sake of my license, I don't get two more speeding tickets. But, you know, we're on the road a lot, so you never know.
Well, thanks for coming down. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to talk to the listeners of Southeast Geeks about what's happening in Southeastern Utah and specifically in rural Utah and Carbon and Emory counties. For the listeners, don't forget to check out the Eastern Utah Business Summit happening on October 26th and 27th, hosted at USU Eastern, featuring Congressman John Curtis. Until next time, take care of yourself, and if you can, take care of someone else. Thanks.